Woo! Ah, welcome to
Men's Book Club.
Wow,
sorry.
We were just laughing about something.
We fucked up.
Yeah, we fucked up.
We're still going to go.
All right, let's do it again. Welcome to
Men's Book Club.
Men's Book Club. My voice is still laughing. Today we are discussing the number one worldwide best-selling author, Dan Brown.
Danica Brown.
Danica Brown. His novel, Inferno, which...
Did you read any of his other books?
No.
No, me either.
No.
I don't know where this falls.
Is this the
first one? No.
No.
So this is like they're all standalone, I guess?
Yeah. But it's the same
character.
I know it's the same character. Yeah. I bought The Da Vinci Code, and I wanted so badly to watch it, and then it came on TV one time, and I didn't know it was The Da Vinci Code, and I watched the whole movie through. And then when I got off, I was like, "Oh, what was that movie I just finished?" And it was The Da Vinci Code.
Then you burned the book.
No, I still. Inferno, which was written in 2013, but for whatever fucking reason, is a 2020 book.
2020.
It is literally COVID written in 2013.
Inspired it.
Okay, so this man, Robert Langdon.
Langdon.
He is a professor of art history, something like that boring.
At Harvard. Harvard man.
Who wakes up in a random hospital in Florence, Italy, and doesn't remember the last 2 days, and is being hunted by this woman dressed in black, and him and the doctor that was taking care of him at the time escape. As they're escaping, they kind of get to know each other a little bit. They're trying to figure out why somebody's out to kill them. And then the entire police in the city is looking for them. They're being hunted by almost military. Little bits and pieces come out about what's going on. He starts to remember little by little. There was this old woman with gray hair. And we as readers start to get a little peek about what's going on because we start to see the story from the perspective of the guy's name? Provost?
Yeah, what does that even mean?
Provost. I have no idea. Should have looked that up. But it's this. Oh, it's almost like a villain on a boat somewhere.
Yeah, he's like a Bond villain.
Yeah, exactly.
We start to get the
story from his point of view and kind of unlock a little bit more and more. And as the story goes on, we get more from his perspective.
Kind of reminded me a little of Indiana Jones.
It was very Indiana Jonesy, yeah.
Even though I just saw any of those movies.
It's also a James Bond movie. You know what it is? It's like Jason Bourne.
Yeah, this one had that element.
Yeah, because it was Europe. They were escaping. Anyway, him and this woman, Sienna, who's the doctor, end up escaping, and they're kind of making their way through Florence, trying to figure out, and at some point come to the realization that there is this man who is out to release a virus, like a plague, out into the world because he is... he believes that there is a problem with overpopulation on the planet. And this is kind of where it gets a little fascinating. I thought that was the most fascinating part of the entire book, and I wish that they would have drilled into those conversations a little bit more. You know, they kind of gave it a couple of chapters here and there, but I wish that man, which again, I don't remember the name of anybody.
My last name was like Zobrist or something.
Zobrist, yeah. He thinks that global warming and starvation, poverty, all of those things that are happening on this planet that are bad are happening because we do not have the resources to be able to sustain life for this many people. And he thinks that at least half of the planet needs to die.
Yeah, but I mean, he's not wrong in a way because the reason war happens and all this other stuff is just why it does happen.
Right. Right.
Or famine or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And that was kind of his like rationale for why he wanted to do it.
He just wanted to accelerate it.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't happening fast enough.
He saw himself as almost a human. He was humanizing it. This man, this Bond villain that was on the boat, was supposed to help him kind of do the research for 2 years without getting caught. The World Health Organization was looking for him because they knew what he was up to, because he basically admitted it to them, thinking that they would get on board when they didn't.
Yeah.
That's the woman in the
weird,
yeah, twist of events there.
Please, let's kill half the world.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think he was trying to adhere to her like scientific mind, thinking that she wouldn't have an emotional side, and she did. One of the big plot twists in this whole thing was that Sienna, the doctor that who's been helping the main character Robert the entire story, ends up, spoiler alert, being one of the big fans.
Did you see that coming?
I did not see that coming.
I thought it was gonna be that Ferris guy. It was, I guess, technically.
She ends up being a huge fan of this Zobrist guy, and she actually is on par to, she's on board to kill the people, and she kind of has a change of heart, like she kind of doesn't want to, but she wants to, or whatever it is.
Yeah, anyway. Like, I still don't understand why he killed himself.
Yeah, so he kills himself a couple of days before this happens, and I think he kills himself, they say, at one point, because he was getting chased. And he goes up to the top of the building. He didn't want to get caught, so he kills himself. He jumps off for whatever reason. What's interesting is he...
Well, one more did.
Yeah. he's helping. he ends up, obviously, creating a video that he wants this Bond villain to release. And usually, that's the kind of line of work that he does. He releases videos and just does whatever the client wants for a certain amount of money.
Basically, yeah. He's almost like a... He just protects them, I guess.
Yeah, he's...
like a shell company.
He's like an enforcer kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. I mean, a shell company. Oh, right.
Pretty cool.
Anyway, that guy, the Bond villain, the Provost, ends up having a change of heart. He calls the World Health Organization. He kind of wants to help in the whole process. And as he's trying to help, we find out that Sienna, the doctor, is not trying to help. And they end up sort of... kind of switching roles. So now Sienna's on the run. She wants to help Zobrist's plan. They find out that he has a bag, and in this bag, the virus is in it, and he's trying to release it to the public so that a bunch of people die. They don't really exactly know what's in the bag. They assume it's the plague. They're not really sure, but they find that it's all the way in Turkey. So they get on a plane, they go to Turkey, Sienna knows that it's in Turkey, yeah, she goes to Turkey.
The Provost guy goes with them.
Everybody's in fucking Turkey now, all of a sudden. And they go to this underground club place, whatever, and they see that the bag is underwater and it's already been dissolved because it's been open. And actually what they find out is that the release date, when they thought it was going to be, they thought they got ahead of it and researched it. It was actually a week ago.
Whoops.
And what the reference in the video that this guy wanted to release about that day being the day was that during that day, according to his calculations, it would have already spread worldwide. It didn't end up being the plague, but it ended up being a small strand of DNA that would make 1/3 of the population infertile.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good twist.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
I thought so.
It didn't kill 1/3 of the people or kill a bunch of the people. It ended up just making a bunch of people infertile without them getting sick or without them knowing, really. And over the span of the next 100 years or whatever it is, the population of the planet would decrease naturally. And I'll put that in air quotes. Now, the World Health Organization is, after they hear about what happened and end up catching up with Sienna, kind of are on board now all of a sudden.
Yeah, it was very fucking weird.
They went from like, let's catch this, and then they kind of, the doctor, the gray-haired lady ends up talking to Sienna because she kind of gives
herself
up.
You have good ideas. It's like,
yeah,
you were just trying to stop that.
So let's set this up real quick. Sienna ends up finding Robert, the main character, the protagonist, and he kind of tells her, I need you to come with me and talk to the World Health Organization lady, whose name escapes me, and if you can, let's just all have a conversation. Now, she's wanted. She's supposed to be going to jail, but she trusts Robert Langdon, and she goes, all right, I'll talk to her, and they go sit in a room. It's 2 a.m., and the World Health Organization has a speech that they need to go to Switzerland, where all the top world leaders are going to be there. And Sienna is telling the World Health Organization why what is happening is a good idea. And in the first 400 pages of the book, no one is convinced that this is a good idea. And then after an hour of a conversation, it seems like they all had a change of heart and they're all okay with it.
Yeah, that was like the weirdest part, I thought.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah, she was just like, you know what?
You have good ideas.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Well, you, no, yeah, does yeah. she?
I'm not opposed to the ideas. And I think the book, like I said, I think it painted a really good philosophical questions, and you can argue about it. I mean, I don't want to say, should we kill half the planet, but is he a bad guy if his intentions are supposed to be good? Whatever, that's not the point. The point that bothered me was how quickly her mind changed.
Yeah, it changed very fast.
Like, the Zobrist brought her into the meeting, I mean, in the beginning of the book, and explained it in even more details, and she said, no, no, no.
Yeah, she was, like, horrified.
Yeah, and she ran away, and she spent all this money looking for him and looking for Landon.
I almost felt like she changed because, like, if it was a plague, like, she thought it was going to be, that's bad.
But this is providing the same outcome, just taking longer.
Yeah, but I guess it's not actually killing people. Yeah, yeah. I guess they're taking away a choice of people wanting to have kids, I guess.
Right, exactly.
Maybe.
I thought one of the most fascinating parts of the book was back when Robert Langdon and Sienna were kind of still friends escaping in Florence. She asked, if you could turn a switch and half of the population would die today, would you do it? And he said, no. And he was like, what if the fact that you don't turn that switch means that they all will die in 100 years? Everybody dies in 100 years. So would you rather kill half now or everybody in 100 years?
Can I be the half that lives?
No, if you don't touch it. Yeah, right. And that was kind of the whole theoretical thought behind this. Like, if we do nothing, and this is his argument, Zobrist's argument, if we do nothing, in 100 years, this planet is going to be so unsustainable that we really don't have the resources to make everybody live, so everybody will eventually die. Because we don't have resources. There's going to be nuclear war, countries fighting each other, and he brought all of that into play. He was talking about, you know, there's going to be famine, there's going to be war, the strong countries are going to be the only ones that survive, there's going to be uprisings and anarchies and all this shit because people don't have money, and there's going to be famine, and people are going to starve to death and die that way. Or you can infect them with what they thought was the plague, but what he actually did was a DNA, where we just don't have that many people, and in 100 years, we go from being a 7 billion planet to a 4 billion people planet. And the resources get expanded, and there's more for everyone, and nobody really has to, quote-unquote, starve or whatever it is. It's a very, very interesting idea, and I don't think it was bad. I'm not saying I condone it, but I get it. Mm. You know what I mean? Especially because of the way that it was done. It was kind of like people don't know about, I mean, this could have technically been done to us as humans, and we don't know about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it, you never know. You know, maybe every single person that, now I'm going to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but maybe everybody who took the COVID vaccine, there is a strain in it that affects a certain blood type that does that, you know, or the chicken pox when you're a kid or whatever vaccine. Or if you eat Taco Bell and you're a certain, you know, whatever it is, but there is a chance that some of the things that we're putting in our body is helping us be non-fertile and decreasing the population, and we would never know about it. Would you be pissed off, or would you be happy if your children were actually born because you weren't chosen and they get to live in a world where there is half the population?
Yeah, I thought, resources. I thought she changed when, like, that Sienna person was like, but it is kind of like what's happening now. We're just, like, a scientist is just doing
right,
it.
Right, right.
As opposed to,
right, right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
A natural disaster.
Yeah. The links between this book and COVID, to me, were honestly I kept having to like look up, like, was there an edit done after the book was released? Like, was, did he include something in it? Because it was very COVID-like, very, very COVID-like. And they were talking about quarantining people, and they were talking about vaccines, and they were talking about making sure that people aren't close to what, and it's airborne, and they, I mean, they just, it was so very blatantly COVID that it's odd that this book was written.
Like, yeah, before, yeah.
It was just, it's weird. It's very weird to me. It's a very fascinating book. Obviously, that theme of how sustainable is human life going to be was so fascinating. I really, really wish that they dug a little bit deeper into it. That conversation between Zobrist and the World Health Organization woman, which, damn it, we need to find her name. But
I think it was like Stickley? No, Stokely? Stickley?
Sure. It's a gray-haired lady, Stokely. That conversation that they had was a small chapter, and I really, really wish that they kind of made that a bigger topic. They don't really talk about it again until the very end. Sienna mentions it here and there while she's hanging out with Robert Langdon, because obviously she feels that way, but she didn't want to admit it. So there's like,
yeah, that was cool. They threw a little clues in there.
Yeah, I just wish it was part of the bigger conversation, because I think the theoretical aspect of it is very fascinating. I wish he would have done that instead of spend so much fucking time describing the architecture of Florence.
Yeah, I got to be honest. Like, there's like some chapter. I'm like,
Yeah. He. I get when you're describing. Yeah, it came off very pompous and braggadocious, because he just seemed like he wanted to tell us that he knows all this shit.
I mean, I guess it makes a little bit of sense because of like the characters and art.
No. I don't think that has anything to do with that. I think so? No. I think he likes it. And that's why. Like, he's almost a fan of shit like this. Remember when we read Project Hail Mary and the guy was so into like numbers and physics that he threw it in there so much? This guy did the same thing with architecture.
Only that I thought that one was a little bit easier to get by. This one was some chapters were just all,
because the other guy would just say, oh, if you do this, this happens, whereas this guy's like, oh, and the towers of blah blah, and I'm just, bro, first of all, if you're not a visual person that can sit there and picture what that looks like, you're out. And I'm not going to Google every single building. And you,
I just try to imagine. You know,
it's whatever. Unnecessary. It's unnecessary because it doesn't add anything to the setting, because you're not describing the setting that you're in. You're not describing the building that you're in. You're just describing what this author is passing by, like what the protagonist is passing by. Oh, I just passed by this building. I'm sitting here spending a page and a half with you telling me what this old architectural building looks like in Florence, and then the author's already passed it.
Yeah.
The character's already passed. It's just unnecessary. We should have spent a little bit more time on the actual conversation revolving, should we or should we not? What's good, what's not good? Maybe a little bit more on the characters. Maybe a little bit more on the adventure itself. Maybe a little bit more on why this provost guy ended up in this job. I mean, there's so many routes he could have chosen. And instead, from this, what is it, 550?
Yeah, it's a lot of pages.
Yeah, 550-page book. I think probably, I'm going to say at least 100 was spent on describing old Florentian architecture.
I like the book. I think that it moved it down for me a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I agree. If he didn't have that in, this book would almost be a 4.5 out of 5 easily, or even a 5 out of 5 if he did the other stuff in it. But he's so focused on Dante and his fucking inferno and these paintings, and I think a big part of this was when he wrote the Da Vinci Code and he mentioned specific things, fans of the book and the movie actually went there to see if they were true, and they were. So he kind of did the same thing here. I just, unless you're very, very much into that, don't care. The passages inside the walls that were taking you to like all these other streets, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't add any value to the book. It doesn't, it's very hard to picture unless you're there. So that part to me kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And there were chapters when I was just like, I'm not going to finish this book. There were chapters that I was reading and I was like, this is what I'm talking about. Let's keep going. And I couldn't put the book down.
The second half, once I got to going.
Yeah. The second half of the book for sure.
I thought the beginning was really good.
Started off really good. Then maybe 50 pages in, it dies for 100 pages. And then it comes back up. And then there were just, the good thing that kept the book going was the chapters were so small. It just felt like,
yeah, they did a good job of like keeping her toes because it wasn't a real chase. It was like a setup to make him seem like he was going to do
this. Once the story started unraveling and you started to get a little bit more about what was going on, like when you found out Sienna was kind of in on it, when you found out that, you know, it was in Turkey all along, when you found out that the whole time all these cops that were chasing him were actually part of his friends, the main lady that was chasing him was sent by, like, when you found out all of this shit. They thought
he
was, like,
switching sides and
all this stuff. Yeah,
I thought, I always find it funny in a book, in a movie, any medium, the bad guy or the provost, whoever, maybe he's not even a bad guy, was like, they reveal every plan. You know, like,
it's like, you don't have to, and you just
It reminds me of, like, you know, the movie, you never saw, like, Scream. They tell her why at the end.
Oh, no, I've seen it.
Yeah, and they're like, you don't have to do
Yeah. You know? It's like you're almost volunteering all this information.
Yeah, it's actually scarier when you have no idea.
Yeah,
I agree. Well, we did this because your mom's a whore.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Like, it honestly reminds me a little bit of the old Scooby-Doo cartoons. Yeah, because it's like, they catch the guy and he just confesses to everything right away. And you're just,
and
like,
I would have got away with it, but it's you fucking kids.
But it's
did you see, like, they're actually doing an HBO Scooby-Doo?
Oh, are they?
Well, not, it's Velma.
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
The girl.
With
the
girl.
Mindy Kaling's doing it. Because, like, supposedly, like, and she's a lesbian. They confirmed she's like a lesbian.
Okay.
Or she was supposed to be. So I guess it's more an adult show. I think it's a cartoon.
Is it?
I think so. But, like, I don't think it's with other characters. It's like a standalone.
Kind of
interesting.
That's gonna be interesting to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably not going to watch it. But it will be interesting for the people that do watch it. It'll be interesting. Yeah,
I don't think I'm going to watch it either.
It'll be interesting for those people.
Yeah. What did you give this book rating-wise?
I'm going to go with 3.5.
I'm at a 3. 3 out of 5. The fascinating idea, fascinating place. Once again, the author just can't get the fuck out of the way and make the story better. I hate when they do this. I hate when they're trying to show off something that nobody cares about.
You know, there's a fine line of, like, I need to add something when it's part of the story than to be like, for 2 chapters.
Yeah.
Discuss the city, which I've never been to in my life.
Yeah, and to be clear, like, so for example, Charles Dickens does this all the time. He describes everything that's happening in the scene, and he's very notorious for it. And some people love it, some people hate it. I love it. I think it's great. But it's different because that, for example, when we did Great Expectations, that character was living in that house.
Yeah.
So when he describes the fireplace and the chair and the walls and the floors and the cabinets, it's okay for me personally because he does it one time and you almost feel like every time we're back in that house, I picture it again.
Yeah, same thing with, what's her name? Stella's house or the...
You
know, because it's like with the mansion. House.
Right.
You can kind of get the, okay, it's kind of like haunted.
Yeah, exactly. Or in his friend's house. Yeah, you, and where they lived in the street and where they worked in the police station. It just felt like it was all for a purpose. Even, I mean... I know we didn't do it on this podcast, but like the Christmas Carol, it's everything, like the house is described perfectly, but you almost need to do that because you're in it the entire time that you're in the story. With him, it's just, again, like you're walking by these buildings, you're walking by these paintings in a museum, you're walking by these doors. You don't need to tell me the shape and the history of this door. At one point, he was talking about the horses that came from Napoleon and then got robbed again and stolen.
I don't know how anybody knows this.
But it's just, I get it. He finds it interesting, and I appreciate that there's somebody out there that finds it interesting, but it shouldn't be a part of this novel because it takes us out of the purpose of this novel. if you wanted to keep it to Dante and the Inferno and the book, okay. But the descriptions, the very, very, very long descriptions of locations that he passes by. I mean, he does it when he's in Turkey. Turkey is the last 100 pages, maybe. And in those 100 pages, half of it are dedicated to the architecture of Turkey. Why?
Yeah, yeah.
So unnecessary. So unnecessary. Yeah, so for me, it's a 3 out of 5.
Although, it always made me laugh that they called it the SRS team.
Oh, yeah.
And when I worked at the place we can't name, there was like a SRS. Yeah, yeah, and I was like... Damn yeah, it. I thought I can't thing. Just get away from this.
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, funny.
Yeah, it's a very compelling story. It has a very good thought provoking element to it. It is up for discussion.
I'm actually happy you brought this one forward because I wanted to read the Da Vinci Code a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I was probably in college and I worked at Target and I bought it. I just never read it and I don't know what happened to it. So. I probably wouldn't think about going back to it, so...
Okay, there we go. Also, when I watched the Da Vinci Code, what's his name stars in it? A very famous guy.
Tommy Hanks.
Yeah, and I couldn't not picture Tom Hanks in this.
Yeah, I
can. And also, she was saying, he was like, I don't know, she was kind of like hitting on him, and I'm picturing her hitting on Tom Hanks.
I did meet Tom Hanks, and I have a picture with him.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I went to his charity event.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah, he was very nice. Very nice guy.
Wow.
Very nice.
All right, I take it back, Tom Hanks. I'm sorry.
No, he was actually like, for a Hollywood celebrity, very nice guy.
Wow.
Very nice guy.
Okay, I'm sorry, Tom Hanks. I know he's a listener, so I apologize.
Yeah, well, he's listening because of me.
Yeah, I remember.
He remembers all right. me from 10 years ago.
Thank you guys for listening. We appreciate it. Go pick up Dan Brown's Inferno if this is the kind of story
pick
that you're into.
Pick up all the Dan Brown books.
Pick them all up. All of them. Get them all. Origins, Inferno, yeah, Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci.
I'm sure he'll has another one on the way. That
yeah,
I don't know
I'm sure
about.
He. Inferno 2, maybe. And Inferno 2. Under his pseudonym, Dan Shit.
Dan.
Okay, we're going.
Thank you guys for listening. Follow us at Men's Book Club Pod on Instagram. We'll see you next time.
See ya.